You know how some companies just quietly hold the keys to entire industries? They're utterly indispensable, yet they operate almost completely out of the public eye.
Fly under the radar.
Exactly. Well, today we're diving into a fascinating example of just that. A French engineering firm that sits right at the very heart of global energy transport, yet chances are you've probably never heard their name.
That's where we come in. Today we're taking a deep dive into Gaz Transport and Technigaz S.A., better known simply as GTT.
GTT. Got it.
Think of them as the silent giant behind the massive global movement of liquefied natural gas, or LNG.
Right.
Our mission for this deep dive is to unpack their truly unique business model, understand how they've achieved such phenomenal profitability. I mean, it's kind of margins you usually only see in, like, software companies.
Yeah, really high-tech stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need to dissect the major forces shaping their market and explore the risks and opportunities that define their future.
We're going to pull back the curtain and show you how an asset-light, technology-driven firm can carve out what is essentially a near monopoly in heavy industry, and what that means for the wider energy world and for you, our listener, who wants to be well-informed. It's a complex and compelling story that really illustrates the power of intellectual property.
And we're drawing all our insights today from comprehensive investment research analysis, which provides a really detailed look at GTT's financials, operations, strategic positioning, all that good stuff. Get ready for some serious aha moments, because this is definitely not your typical industrial company.
Okay, so let's begin by really unpacking this unique business model. When you first hear energy transport, your mind probably jumps to images of massive shipyards building enormous vessels,
Which are
right?
huge steel structures.
But GTT isn't building ships at all. They're doing something far more specialized and frankly, quite ingenious.
You're hitting on the core identity of GTT, which is crucial to grasp from the outset.
Yeah.
They are a technology gatekeeper, not a manufacturer.
Right.
GTT is a French engineering company that designs and licenses highly specialized technology. They don't actually build the physical tanks or the vessels themselves. This asset-light model is absolutely fundamental to their entire operation and, as we'll see, to their incredible profitability.
Okay, so if they're not building the ships, what exactly is this technology they're licensing? I keep hearing about cryogenic containment systems. For those of us who aren't deeply familiar with the nuances of LNG transport, why are these systems so critical?
These systems are, simply put, essential. LNG, as you probably know, is natural gas that's been supercooled to a liquid state, specifically around minus 163 degrees Celsius.
Minus 163 C, right.
Incredibly cold. If the temperature rises even slightly, it boils off back into a gas. Now, this isn't just a loss of valuable cargo, but if it's not managed properly, it can pose a significant safety risk.
Right, pressure buildup and all that.
Exactly. GTT's cryogenic containment systems are the advanced engineering solutions that ensure this incredibly cold, highly volatile cargo can be safely contained, efficiently insulated, and transported across vast oceans. The critical safety aspect of this technology truly cannot be overstated. It's paramount.
So they're not building the ships, but they're providing the brain, the indispensable design for the most critical part of the ship that actually carries the LNG. Where do they sit in the grand scheme of things in the overall energy value chain?
They've carved out a very, very powerful position as a critical technology gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper, okay.
While their direct customers are the shipyards, the folks physically constructing these massive LNG carriers, the actual demand for GTT's technology is largely pulled by the end users.
Bulb cold, meaning.
The global gas companies and the ship owners who are placing the orders for these multi-billion dollar vessels. These powerful end users frequently specify GTT's technology in their tenders, effectively cementing it as the industry standard.
So the buyers are saying we want this specific GTT system in our ship.
Precisely. This means GTT provides the indispensable engineering services, the hands-on technical support, and the specialized training to these shipyards under what they call Technical Assistance and Licensing Agreements, or TALAs.
Teles.
They essentially equip the shipyards with the precise know-how and the certified designs to build these complex containment systems flawlessly. They're selling the blueprint and the instruction manual, plus support.
That sounds like an incredibly powerful position. It's almost like they've set up an invisible toll booth on global LNG trade. Can you elaborate on this royalty-based revenue model and how it translates into such high margins?
The toll booth concept is a perfect analogy. GTT collects a fee or royalty for every single vessel or storage unit that is built using its proprietary technology.
Every single one.
Every single one. This primary income stream is royalties, and it's typically calculated as around 5% of the vessel's overall construction cost.
5% of the whole ship cost, not just the tank.
Of the overall construction cost, yes. Imagine that. They're not spending a dime on raw materials or labor for the actual construction, yet they get a percentage of the total build cost for providing the most critical intellectual property for the vessel.
That's quite a model. And it's not just that one-time payment for the design, is it? They have other ways of monetizing their unique position beyond just the initial license.
Precisely. Beyond those core royalties, GTT earns revenue from associated engineering studies necessary for customizing each vessel design, operational assistance provided during the construction phase to ensure everything goes smoothly, ongoing maintenance services for vessels already in operation, and increasingly, they're moving into digital solutions designed to optimize vessel performance and lifecycle management.
Okay, let's put some numbers on this because it really clarifies their model. What does their revenue breakdown look like, for example, from the first half of 2025?
Yeah, looking at their H1 2025 financial snapshot truly highlights the model's composition and its overwhelming dependence on their core business. Out of $389 million in total revenue, a staggering $365 million. That's a whopping 94% of their total revenue came from new builds.
94%. Wow.
And within that, royalties from LNG and ethane carriers alone accounted for $346 million. This absolutely dwarfs the revenue from other segments. Services contributed a modest $12 million, the nascent digital business $9 million, and a smaller $2.5 million from Elogen, their electrolyzer segment.
Which we'll get to later.
Right. But this breakdown vividly illustrates just how overwhelmingly dependent they are on those core royalty payments, underscoring the dominance of their IP.
And this IP-centric royalty-based model, it creates something truly remarkable for a business, doesn't it? Operating leverage. Can you break down for us what that actually means in GTT's context?
Absolutely. This intellectual property-centric model translates into immense operating leverage. Think of it this way. GTT invests heavily upfront in research and development to create these complex patent designs.
Right, the R&D costs.
Those are largely fixed costs.
Yeah.
Once those R&D costs and their relatively fixed operational expenses for their engineering teams are covered, a very large portion of any incremental revenue from new licenses drops directly to the bottom line.
Because the cost to license it again is minimal.
Exactly. They don't need to build new factories or hire thousands of new workers for each new ship order. They simply license the design again. This is what drives their truly exceptional margins, which we'll delve into later. It's a beautifully efficient, scalable model.
So their entire competitive advantage, this incredible operating leverage, hinges on the quality and uniqueness of their technology. What are these patented technologies, often called their crown jewels, that have given them such an unassailable lead? I've heard a lot about their Mark III and NO96 systems. What makes them so special?
GTT's market dominance is undeniably built upon two main families of membrane containment systems, Mark III and NO96. Both of these are what we call integrated systems, meaning they are directly supported by the ship's inner hull. This design is a key advantage because it maximizes the actual cargo volume and space efficiency within a given hull size.
More gas in the same size ship.
Precisely. Oh. Especially compared to older, self-supporting tank designs, like the large spherical MOS tanks you might still see on some older LNG carriers, those big white balls.
Yeah, I've seen those. Less efficient then.
Generally, yes. GTT's membrane systems make better use of the hull space.
Let's do a deep dive into the NO96 system first. How is it designed and how has it evolved over time to maintain GTT's lead?
The NO96 system is characterized by its dual metallic membranes, which provide a crucial double layer of safety. Both the primary and secondary barriers are made from Invar.
Invar, what's that?
It's a unique nickel steel alloy. Imagine trying to keep something perfectly stable at temperatures colder than Antarctica, where most materials would shrink and crack dramatically. Invar barely changes size with temperature changes.
Ah, so it's stable at -163°C.
Exactly. It ensures the tank's integrity at those ultra-cold temperatures. It's literally a perfect fit for this extreme environment. The original insulation was provided by prefabricated plywood boxes filled with perlite.
Okay.
Its evolution is focused heavily on reducing the boil-off gas, or BOG rate.
BOG rate. That sounds important.
It is. It's the natural evaporation of the LNG cargo during transit. The original NO96 had a BOG rate of about 0.15% of cargo volume per day.
Okay, 0.15% per day.
However, through continuous R&D, GTT introduced the NO96GW, which used glass wool insulation, bringing the BOG down to 0.125%. Then came the NO96 LO3 and LO3 Plus Spore, which further reduce it to 0.11% and 0.10% respectively.
Getting smaller and smaller.
And their latest generation, the NR96 Super Plus Shore, using reinforced polyurethane foam, or RPUF, panels, achieves an impressive 0.085% per day.
Wow, almost half the original rate. That's a remarkable improvement. How about the Mark III system? What's its design and what advancements have they made there?
The Mark III system has a primary membrane made of corrugated stainless steel. Think of corrugations like the ripples in cardboard that give the steel immense flexibility.
Ah, so it can handle the movement and temperature changes.
Exactly. It allows it to withstand the extreme thermal stresses that occur when ultra-cold LNG sloshes around inside the tank. Its insulation comes from reinforced polyurethane foam panels, and its secondary barrier is a composite material called triplex, essentially aluminum foil sandwiched between layers of glass, cloth, and resin, providing robust backup containment.
Okay, sounds high-tech.
Like the NR96, the Mark III has seen significant advancements. The original Mark III also had a BOG rate of 0.15%. But with innovations like the Mark III Flex, introduced in 2011, they reduced the BOG rate to between 0.10% and 0.085% by increasing insulation thickness.
Getting into that same low range.
Right. And the Mark III Flex Plus Eyelid, launched in 2017, pushed it even further, guaranteeing a BOG rate as low as an astounding 0.07% per day.
0.07%, that's tiny.
It is incredibly low.
So, it's clear GTT has made huge strides in reducing this boil-off gas rate. But for you, the listener, why is a lower BOG rate so critical? What does it really mean for ship operators beyond just a technical specification?
This is where the aha moment truly comes in. A lower BOG rate is a critical differentiator, and it translates directly into very significant economic savings for ship operators. Think about it. Even a tiny fraction of a percent reduction in boil-off gas translates into millions of dollars saved on a single multi-billion dollar LNG cargo.
Millions? Just from that tiny percentage?
Absolutely. Every tiny fraction of a percent saved means more valuable cargo actually reaches its destination to be sold. While some boil-off gas was historically used to power the vessel, modern, more efficient engines mean that any excess boil-off is just lost cargo and lost revenue. Mm. So minimizing this loss is a key part of GTT's value proposition, directly impacting the profitability of a multi-billion dollar cargo shipment. It's not just a technical spec. It's a huge financial advantage that cements their indispensable status.
That makes perfect sense. Less evaporation equals more money. Now, this brings us to what GTT calls its fortress, the intellectual property, and what sounds like an incredible brand moat. How extensive is their IP, and how do they defend it year after year?
Their IP is truly formidable, creating a protective barrier around their business. By the end of 2024, GTT held an astonishing 3,482 active patents.
3,500 patents.
And they filed 66 new ones in that year alone. This extensive patent shield is their primary moat and a massive barrier to entry for any potential competitor. It's what protects their core designs and the continuous stream of innovations that allow them to keep pushing those BOG rates lower and lower.
That's an impressive number of patents, but patents have a finite lifespan, right? Usually 20 years or so. How do they ensure this fortress doesn't crumble as older patents expire?
You're absolutely right. Patents generally have a finite 20-year lifespan from their filing date. That's why R&D spending for GTT is not just about growth, it's a fundamental defensive necessity. They've consistently spent around 10% of their revenue on R&D over the past decade.
10% of revenue back into R&D? That's significant.
It is. This sustained investment is crucial for perpetually refreshing their patent wall, ensuring they continue to protect their newest, most efficient technologies as older patents expire, and staying well ahead of any competitors. It's a continuous arms race they must win.
And it's not just the patents, is it? They also have this deep integration with shipyards. How does that create another layer of their moat?
Right, it's layered protection. Their comprehensive package of engineering and support services, those tellies we mentioned earlier, deeply integrates GTT into the shipyard's workflows. Mm-hmm. Shipyards become reliant not just on GTT's designs, but on their proven processes, their specialized expertise, and the crucial certifications they receive from major classification societies like DNV, Bureau Veritas, and Lloyd's Register.
The big names that approve ships.
Exactly. These are absolutely essential for vessel approval and insurance. This creates very high switching costs. For a shipyard to switch to a different, unproven technology would involve significant retraining of their workforce, new certification processes, and introduce considerable operational and design risk into multi-billion dollar projects. It's simply not worth the hassle or the risk for them, usually.
So if you're a shipyard, you're not just buying a design, you're buying into an entire ecosystem of support and trust. This leads to what you call the brand moat, doesn't it?
Precisely. The brand moat is perhaps the most powerful of all, rooted deeply in trust. Major energy companies and ship owners are incredibly risk-averse when it comes to transporting multi-billion dollar cargoes of hazardous material.
Understandably so.
They often specify GTT technology in their tenders, even if alternatives exist, precisely because of its unparalleled 60-year track record of safety, reliability, and insurability. No one wants to risk a multi-billion dollar asset or their career on unproven technology. This creates a powerful inertia that reinforces the patent moat. It means GTT systems are the default, trusted choice, even if a competitor tries to offer a slightly cheaper alternative. The trust factor is immense and incredibly difficult for any new entrant to replicate.
So GTT has built this incredible fortress of technology, but no company operates in a vacuum. What are the powerful global forces currently fueling the demand for LNG, and by extension, for GTT's indispensable systems? It sounds like they're riding a massive wave right now, the global LNG supercycle. What exactly is driving this, and what do the growth projections look like for the global LNG market?
You're absolutely right. The global LNG market is indeed in a phase of robust, secular growth, underpinned by very powerful long-term global trends. We're seeing aggressive growth forecasts, with global LNG production capacity projected to expand significantly from around 511 million tons per annum, or MTPA, in 2025.
511 MTPA.
To 763 MTPA by 2030.
Wow, that's a big jump in just 5 years.
It is. That's a compound annual growth rate of over 8%. And Shell, a major industry player and certainly a credible source, even forecasts a staggering 60% demand increase by 2040.
60% by 2040. Huge long-term growth.
So what are the key demand drivers behind this surge? Where is all this insatiable demand coming from?
There are three main forces at play, each significant on its own. First, the energy transition.
Okay.
There's a global shift happening, particularly pronounced in Asia Pacific, away from dirtier fuels like coal towards natural gas for power generation. LNG is increasingly seen as a critical transition fuel to help nations meet their decarbonization goals, as it's significantly cleaner burning than coal, offering a practical step toward lower emissions. So, cleaner than coal, acting as a bridge fuel. Makes sense. What's number two?
Second, energy security. The profound impact of the conflict in Ukraine cannot be overstated. It has fundamentally reshaped global energy flows, forcing Europe to dramatically increase its reliance on seaborne LNG from reliable producers like the U.S. and Qatar.
Replacing Russian pipeline gas.
Exactly. Creating a large, new, and durable source of demand that, frankly, wasn't there at this scale before.
And the third driver.
The third is marine bunker fuel. This is a rapidly growing and truly exciting segment for GTT. Due to stricter international emissions regulations, there's been a rapid adoption of LNG as a cleaner marine fuel for vessels far beyond just traditional LNG carriers.
Right, you mentioned container ships, cruise liners.
Exactly. Large container ships, cruise liners, bulk carriers, car carriers, they're all now opting for LNG propulsion in many new builds. The global LNG-fueled fleet is actually projected to more than double from 638 vessels in 2024 to over 1,200 by 2028. That creates a significant new addressable market for GTT.
Doubling in just 4 years, that's fast growth.
It is. And crucially, looking ahead, there's a substantial wave of new LNG liquefaction capacity coming online from 2026, particularly from major projects in the United States like CP2 and Corpus Christi, and also Qatar's massive North Field expansion. This surge in supply will necessitate a corresponding expansion of the global LNG carrier fleet to transport these volumes to market, directly feeding GTT's order book.
More supply needs more ships. Makes sense. That's a huge interconnected pipeline of demand and supply fueling GTT's business. Let's talk about the LNG carrier order book trends. We've heard about unprecedented ordering waves. What does GTT's order book look like right now, and how much forward revenue visibility does it give them?
It's truly remarkable. The industry saw an unprecedented wave of new vessel orders, with record activity in 2022 and another exceptionally strong year in 2024, driven by those massive fleet expansion programs we just discussed, particularly from Qatar and U.S. exports.
So a flood of orders.
A flood, yes. For GTT, this translates into an incredible, highly visible order book. As of June 2025, their order book stood at 308 units, including 280 LNG carriers.
308 units on the books.
And this represents about 1.7 billion in secured high-margin revenue.
1.7 billion euros locked in.
Exactly, providing clear visibility for the next 4 to 5 years. Since GTT's revenue is recognized progressively during the multi-year construction phase of these vessels, which typically lasts 3 to 4 years, it gives them a highly predictable and de-risked income stream.
So GTT is insulated from some of the short-term market noise, even if there are some temporary headwinds, correct? I hear sometimes about shipping rates softening.
That's a critical point to understand. While there's a near-term imbalance with fleet capacity growth projected at 17% in 2024-2025, temporarily outpacing trade volumes, which are growing around 7%.
But more ships than needed right now?
Leading to a softening of short-term spot charter rates, yes. But GTT is largely insulated. Their revenue is tied to vessel construction, which is largely secured by long-term charters linked to specific committed LNG projects.
Yeah, so the ships being built are already contracted out long-term.
Mostly, yes. They receive their royalties during that multi-year construction phase, long before a vessel is even exposed to the volatile spot market. So while you might read shipping headlines mentioning softening rates, it doesn't directly impact GTT's current revenue visibility from its secured backlog.
That's a key distinction for our listeners. And what about long-term demand? Is there a replacement wave coming that will keep GTT busy even after the current expansion cycle of new projects slows down?
Absolutely. And this is a significant long-term demand driver that adds another layer of stability to GTT's outlook. The International Maritime Organizations, or IMOs, New Carbon Intensity Indicator, CII, regulations.
More environmental rules.
Right. They're expected to render over 350 older, less efficient steam turbine LNG vessels economically unviable as early as 2028.
350 older ships potentially needing replacement.
Exactly. These ships simply won't meet the new environmental standards efficiently. This creates a substantial replacement market that could smooth out historical cyclicality in the shipbuilding industry, ensuring continued demand for GTT's advanced, more efficient systems well into the future, even beyond the current expansion cycle driven by new liquefaction projects.
So a baseline level of demand just from replacing old stock. Interesting. Let's also consider the regulatory environment and geopolitical factors. How do these external forces play into GTT's advantage or create new opportunities?
The regulatory environment is broadly favorable to GTT, almost acting as a tailwind. The IMO's IGC code mandates strict global standards for liquefied gas transport. GTT's technologies are not just engineered to meet, but often to exceed these stringent safety requirements.
Which reinforces their safety moat.
Precisely. It bolsters their value proposition to inherently risk-averse customers. On the environmental front, the IMO's emissions regulations, like the 2020 sulfur cap and the IGF code, along with the EU's Fit for 55 package, are powerful catalysts. They're driving the shift to cleaner fuels like LNG, creating new addressable markets beyond traditional LNG carriers.
Like the container ships and cruise liners using LNG fuel we talked about.
Exactly. Often using GTT's smaller containment solutions for those fuel tanks.
And geopolitics has obviously reshaped global energy markets in profound ways. How has that specifically impacted GTT?
Geopolitical events, particularly the conflict in Ukraine and Europe's subsequent pivot away from Russian pipeline gas, have fundamentally reshaped global LNG trade flows. This has not only underscored LNG's strategic importance for energy security, but has also directly stimulated new infrastructure investment and critically carrier orders.
More demand for non-Russian LNG means more ships needed from places like the U.S. and Qatar.
Absolutely. We've seen a surge, especially from the U.S. and Qatar, as they ramp up exports to meet global demand. Additionally, China's national policies on shifting from coal to gas for cleaner air also contribute significantly to this sustained demand, ensuring a robust market for LNG transportation.
Okay, so GTT has this fantastic business model, riding a supercycle with strong tailwinds. This sounds almost too good to be true. Do they have any real competition, or is it truly a quasi-monopoly in practice?
In their core market for new-build LNG carriers, GTT truly does enjoy a quasi-monopolistic position. It's quite remarkable.
Really? That strong?
Yes. Their membrane systems are installed on approximately 3/4 of the world's operating LNG carrier fleet, and critically, they are selected for the vast majority of new-build orders today.
The vast majority.
Okay. It's a remarkably powerful position, reinforced by the deep trust from all leading gas companies and ship owners who consider GTT's technology the default safe choice due to its unparalleled safety and reliability record.
So what about direct competitors? Are there older technologies still out there, or are new threats emerging?
Well, there are traditional alternatives, like the older, less efficient, self-supporting MOS-type spherical tanks and prismatic or SPB tanks. We mentioned those earlier.
Right, the big white balls.
But GTT's membrane systems are generally preferred because they're far more space efficient, allowing for significantly greater cargo volume within a given hull size, and are generally more cost-effective over the vessel's lifetime. However, this is where it gets really interesting and complex.
Oh.
The most significant and credible competitive threat comes from South Korea's big three shipyards, Hanwha Ocean, Hyundai Heavy Industries, and Samsung Heavy Industries.
Wait, those are GTT's biggest customers, aren't they? That's a fascinating, almost paradoxical dynamic.
Exactly. It's a very unusual situation. They are GTT's largest customers, but they are also highly sophisticated engineering firms in their own right, and they are intensely motivated to reduce their reliance on GTT and avoid paying those 5% royalties on every single vessel they build.
They want to keep that 5% for themselves.
Naturally. So they've been actively developing their own proprietary containment systems.
Right.
We're talking about systems like KC-1 and KC-2 from Korea Gas Corporation in partnership with the shipyards, Solidus from Hanwha Ocean, and KCS from Samsung Heavy Industries.
Okay, so Korean alternatives are being developed. How do these competing systems stack up, particularly on that critical boil-off rate we talked about earlier, which is such a huge driver of economic value?
That is precisely the battleground.
Yeah.
GTT's latest systems like Mark III Flex Plus and NO96's Super Plus N achieve BOG rates as low as 0.07% to 0.085% per day.
Super low.
The competing KC-1 system, for example, has a reported BOG rate of around 0.12%.
0.12% versus 0.07% or 0.085%. Okay.
That performance gap, which might seem small at first glance, is absolutely crucial. As we discussed, a lower BOG rate translates into substantial lifetime economic value for ship owners because less valuable cargo evaporates during transit. That economic benefit, which can literally be millions of dollars per cargo over the lifespan of a vessel, often far outweighs the royalty cost of GTT's system.
So the savings from lower boil-off are worth more than the royalty fee?
Often, yes. It's a powerful deterrent against switching. It's a clear illustration that performance trumps price in this high-stakes game, at least so far.
Are there other niche players or different types of competition GTT faces?
Yes, there are smaller players, like Singapore-based L&T Marine with its L&T ABOX system, generally targeting smaller vessels or specific niche markets, and importantly, in the growing LNG as fuel market.
Where ships use LNG as their own fuel.
Right. In that market, GTT's membrane solutions face competition from simpler, lower-cost Type C tanks. These Type C tanks are often preferred for smaller fuel volumes in non-LNG carrier vessels, where the premium for GTT's ultra-efficient membrane technology isn't always justified for fuel storage versus main cargo storage. It's a different cost-benefit analysis.
Okay, so competition in that specific segment. So even with these competitive thwarts, GTT has largely maintained its lead. Is there an innovation paradox at play here, where the competition actually makes GTT stronger?
There absolutely is. This very competitive pressure has ironically spurred GTT's own relentless R&D efforts. It's forced them to innovate even faster, leading to the development of even better systems like Mark III Flex Plus and NO96 Super Plus, constantly pushing the envelope on efficiency.
They have to stay ahead.
Exactly. This creates a moving target that makes it incredibly hard for competitors to catch up and actually reinforces GTT's leadership. They're constantly pushing the performance frontier, making their own moat wider and deeper with each innovation.
So let's summarize these interlocking competitive moats that GTT has built around its business, because it's not just one thing, but a combination.
That's right. It's multiple layers. First, the sheer scale of their intellectual property, that vast patent portfolio, acts as the primary line of defense.
The patent.
Second, the safety and track record, what we call the trust moat. With over 60 years of operational experience and a flawless safety record, GTT has an unparalleled history. In an industry transporting hazardous cargo, this history is a decisive factor for highly risk-averse ship owners, financiers, and insurers. Choosing an unproven system carries immense career and financial repercussions. No one wants to be the first to try something new when billions of dollars and lives are at stake.
Nobody gets fired for buying IBM Principle, but for LNG tanks.
Kind of, yeah. Third, there are high switching costs and ecosystem integration. GTT's deep integration into shipyard workflows with pre-approvals from classification societies and established processes makes switching operationally complex and highly risky.
It's just easier to stick with GTT.
For the shipyards, yes.
Yeah.
And finally, their continuous R&D with consistent 10% revenue reinvestment ensures they stay ahead on critical performance metrics like the BOG rate, constantly raising the bar for any potential challenger.
But no moat is completely impenetrable. There's been a significant legal and regulatory dispute that could represent a crack in this fortress, specifically with the KFTC ruling in Korea. What was that all about, and why is it so significant?
This is a significant structural risk for GTT, definitely something to watch. In 2020, the Korea Fair Trade Commission, or KFTC, ruled that GTT's longstanding practice of bundling its technology license with mandatory technical assistance was an anti-competitive practice.
Bundling the license with support services?
Yes, GTT argued vehemently that this bundle was inseparable and absolutely essential for guaranteeing the safety, quality, and integrity of its highly complex technology. However, the ruling is upheld. This forced GTT to fundamentally change its business practice, allowing Korean shipyards to perform these technical services themselves if they choose, without being compelled to purchase them from GTT.
So the yards can now do the GTT support work in-house?
If they develop the capability and get certified, yes.
So what are the long-term implications of this ruling? Is it just about a fine, or is there something more fundamental and strategically damaging at play here?
It's far more fundamental than just a fine. This ruling represents a major long-term strategic threat. It could potentially weaken GTT's moat by allowing its most sophisticated customers, precisely those Korean shipyards, who are also its fiercest competitors, to gain deeper, hands-on expertise in the construction, installation, and maintenance of membrane systems.
Letting them learn GTT's secrets, basically.
Essentially, yes. This deeper expertise could, in turn, accelerate their own technology development efforts, reduce their reliance on GTT's detailed support, and crucially, increase their bargaining power in future contract negotiations. It's not about the immediate financial impact. It's about the potential erosion of a key competitive barrier, essentially allowing the fox into the henhouse, so to speak. It helps the competitors get smarter, faster.
Now let's talk about the numbers, because this is where GTT truly shines and sets itself apart. We're talking about a financial profile that most companies, regardless of industry, can only dream of.
You're absolutely right. GTT's asset-light, royalty-based business model translates into a financial profile of truly exceptional quality, characterized by strong top-line growth and extraordinarily high margins.
Let's start with growth.
Looking at their top-line growth, it's been impressive, directly driven by the booming LNG new build cycle. For the full fiscal year 2024, revenue reached $641.4 million, representing a substantial 50% year-over-year increase.
50% growth. Solid.
Very solid. This momentum continued robustly into the first half of 2025, with revenues climbing another 32% to $389 million compared to the prior year period.
Still strong growth. And the margins, you mentioned they are in a league of their own. Can you quantify that for us?
They absolutely are. Their IP-centric model, where they're licensing designs rather than manufacturing, translates into best-in-class profitability. For fiscal year 2024, their gross profit margin was an exceptional 95.6%.
95.6%.
Almost pure profit on the revenue line. Think about that nearly every euro of revenue they generate turns into gross profit, meaning their cost of sales is almost negligible. It's incredible.
Wow. What about EBITDA?
Their EBITDA margin, which is a great measure of operational efficiency, has been consistently above 60%. Expanding to a remarkable 68.0% in H1 2025, clearly demonstrating that powerful operating leverage we discussed earlier.
68% EBITDA margin. Unbelievable.
And their net margin for FY 2024 was an astonishing 54.2%, over half their revenue dropping to the bottom line as net profit.
Incredible. I did notice a slight dip in the net margin in the first half of 2025, though. It was still high, but lower. What was that about? Does it signal a crack in their profitability?
That's a keen observation, and it's important to understand. The net margin in H1 2025 was 46.2%, a slight compression from the prior year's 57.8%. This was primarily attributable to a one-time non-current operating expense of $48.2 million.
A one-off cost.
Exactly. It was related to the strategic restructuring of their Elugen Hydrogen subsidiary.
Okay, that makes sense. Not a core business issue, then.
Correct. It's not indicative of a core business issue. It simply underscores that while their core licensing business is incredibly profitable and stable, their diversification efforts, especially into new, more capital-intensive areas, can introduce some volatility and one-off costs that momentarily impact the bottom line. The core remains pristine.
So the market has become accustomed to these pristine margins, meaning any perceived deviation could have a significant impact on their valuation, even if the margins remained excellent by other industry standards.
Precisely. The market has come to expect these extraordinary levels of profitability from GTT, making its valuation highly sensitive to any perceived or potential degradation. even if their margins remain excellent compared to most industrial companies, a perception of erosion from these lofty heights could lead to a significant re-rating of the stock. It's a very high bar they've set for themselves.
This asset-light model also leads to world-class returns on capital, which, again, are not typically seen in the industrial sector. It's almost unheard of, isn't it?
It's very true, and it's another testament to their unique model. The business model's incredibly low capital intensity drives truly outstanding returns across the board. For FY 2024, the return on equities, or ROE, was a remarkable 75.4%.
75% ROE.
With a normalized ROE reaching an even higher 86.4%. The return on invested capital, or ROIC, which tells you how efficiently they're using all their capital, was an equally impressive 82.3%. And the return on assets, or ROA, stood at a very strong 42.7%, normalized to 49.0%.
Those numbers are just wild. Like you said, software or pharma territory, not heavy industry.
Exactly. It vividly showcases GTT's unique capital efficiency and ability to generate immense profits with minimal physical assets.
And all of that translates into cold, hard cash, doesn't it? They're often described as a powerful cash-generating machine.
That's exactly right. The profitability translates directly into strong cash flow. In fiscal year 2024, GTT generated $361 million in operating cash flow, converting a massive portion of that into $300 million of free cash flow.
300 million euros in free cash flow on 641 million revenue. Very efficient.
Extremely. A key benefit of their business model is a favorable working capital cycle. License fees are often billed and collected from shipyards in advance of when the full revenue is recognized on the income statement, which consistently bolsters their cash reserves.
So they get paid up front, basically.
Often, yes. And to top it all off, they maintain what can only be described as a fortress balance sheet. GTT is effectively debt-free, with a substantial cash position of $343 million at the end of FY 2024. This immense financial strength provides significant operational flexibility, allowing them to invest in future growth, and underpins their exceptionally generous capital return policy to shareholders.
So we've established GTT's current dominant position and their incredible financials. But what about the future? How are they fueling future revenue beyond the current boom? And what does their order intake and backlog look like going forward?
Their recent history has been defined by an unprecedented wave of order intake, directly reflecting the boom in global LNG investment and the rapid expansion of the carrier fleet. They had a record year in 2022 with 162 orders for LNG carriers, followed by another exceptionally strong year in 2024, which was the second highest in their history.
So the orders have been pouring in.
Absolutely. This surge has critically built a formidable backlog, providing exceptional revenue visibility. As of June 2025, their order book stood at 308 units.
Still over 300.
Including 280 core LNG carriers, 23 ethane carriers, 5 FSRUs or FLNGs for floating infrastructure, plus another 54 LNG as fuel vessels. This backlog translates to an impressive $1.7 billion in secured high-margin future revenue, providing a highly predictable income stream over the next 4 to 5 years.
4 to 5 years of revenue already locked in, that's huge certainty.
It is. And their own long-term forecasts are even more ambitious, aren't they? They're looking well beyond this current cycle. They certainly are. GTT itself forecasts cumulative orders for more than 450 LNG carriers between 2025 and 2034, indicating a long runway for their core business.
450 more ships over the next decade or so.
That's their projection. This substantial and contracted backlog acts as a truly invaluable funding bridge. It allows GTT to invest patiently in long-term growth initiatives from a position of immense financial strength without needing to access external capital markets and dilute shareholders. It's a huge strategic advantage to have such predictable, lucrative revenue locked in for years to come.
So beyond the core LNG carrier business, what are GTT's strategies for adjacent market opportunities? Are they diversifying? And if so, how?
They are, and it can be described as a barbell strategy, balancing lower risk expansion into logical adjacencies that leverage their existing expertise.
Sticking close to home.
With higher risk ventures into truly nascent technologies.
Okay, barbell, what's on the lower risk side?
The most significant and promising growth vector right now is LNG as fuel.
We keep coming back to that. It seems really important.
It is. As the global shipping industry decarbonizes and faces stricter environmental regulations, LNG is rapidly being adopted as a cleaner propulsion fuel for a wide range of vessels beyond just LNG carriers. We're talking about massive container ships, cruise liners, bulk carriers, car carriers, and even smaller ferries. This creates entirely new addressable markets for GTT's containment systems, though often for smaller fuel tanks rather than cargo tanks.
Got it.
In the first half of 2025 alone, GTT secured orders for 18 new LNG-powered container ships, bringing their total orders in this rapidly growing segment to 129 vessels to date. This is a massive new opportunity.
129 orders already just for LNG fuel tanks on other ship types.
Okay.
What other adjacent areas are they exploring that leverage their cryogenic expertise?
They're also applying their containment technology to floating infrastructure, specifically floating storage and regasification units, or FSRUs.
FSRUs, those act like import terminals.
Exactly. They provide flexible, mobile import capacity for LNG and floating LNG, or FLNG, facilities for offshore gas liquefaction. While a smaller market in terms of units, these are exceptionally large, high-value projects.
Big ticket items.
Right. They also have concepts for small-scale LNG and ethane carriers, with capacities ranging from 5,000 to 60,000 cubic meters designed for regional distribution and bunkering operations. And they have a strong position in very large ethane carriers, or VLACs, securing 7 orders in H1 2025. Ethane transport is another niche using similar tech.
Okay, so that's existing applications in new markets. But beyond current markets, GTT is constantly investing in new technology and R&D for future frontiers. What are they looking at for the very long term, perhaps even beyond LNG?
This is absolutely crucial for their long-term survival and continued dominance. They consistently reinvest around 10% of their revenue into R&D, fueling a prolific patenting program with 62 new patents filed in 2024 alone. This continuous innovation is about staying ahead, but also looking at future fuels.
Hydrogen.
Exactly. Leveraging their deep cryogenic expertise, GTT is strategically positioning itself for the long-term shift towards zero-carbon fuels. They're actively developing containment solutions for ammonia and liquid hydrogen, having already received crucial approvals in principle, or AAPs.
So basically, initial design approvals.
Right. For NH-ready tank designs and even liquid hydrogen transport systems. This shows they're thinking decades ahead, preparing for a post-LNG world, potentially.
That's a huge bet on the future, but it makes sense given their core competency in cryogenics. And what about digitalization? That seems like a lower-risk adjacent growth pillar that's already delivering.
It is indeed, and it's a very promising avenue. GTT is building a significant digital services pillar focused on improving the operational and environmental performance of vessels. This has been driven by smart strategic acquisitions. They combine previous acquisitions, Ascens and Arorca, to form Ascens Arorca, which provides smart shipping and fleet performance software.
Using data to make ships run better.
Precisely. But the more decisive move was the acquisition of Danelec in H1 2025 for $194 million.
Danelec, what do they do?
Danelec is a global leader in maritime data collection and voyage data recorders, essentially the black boxes of ships.
Ah, okay. So GTT gets access to the data recorder market.
Exactly. This acquisition instantly positions GTT as a global leader in vessel performance management and gives it a crucial foothold on 15% of the global fleet's VDR market, allowing them to collect vital data across many ship types. This digital business is already growing rapidly, seeing 36% revenue growth in H1 2025 and boasts attractive gross margins of 57%, indicating it's a successful and profitable diversification.
That sounds like a clear success and a natural extension of their expertise. But then there's their venture into green hydrogen with Elogen, which you described earlier as a high-risk venture. What's the story there? Did it pan out as they hoped?
This was GTT's most ambitious and frankly riskiest diversification. They acquired Elogen in 2020 to enter the green hydrogen production market, specifically manufacturing PEM electrolyzers.
Making the equipment to produce hydrogen.
Right. This was a significant departure from their asset-light IP licensing model, moving into capital-intensive manufacturing. However, this venture has proven challenging. In 2025, GTT announced a strategic pivot for Elogen, halting a planned gigafactory that would have required massive capital expenditure.
Pulling back on big spending there.
Yes, and refocusing it much more narrowly on R&D to improve product competitiveness. This restructuring resulted in a significant $45 million non-current operating expense for GTT.
That explains the hit to net margin earlier.
Exactly. This experience underscores the significant execution risk associated with diversification into areas far from the company's core competency. It's a clear lesson learned about the difficulties of straying too far from your knitting, even for a company as strong as GTT. Manufacturing electrolyzers is a very different business than licensing tank designs.
So with all that incredible cash GTT generates from its core business, how do they decide to spend it? What's their capital allocation strategy, particularly when it comes to returning value to us, the shareholders?
GTT's immense cash flow and remarkably low capital requirements put a significant emphasis on smart capital allocation. The primary method of returning capital to shareholders is a very generous dividend policy.
Dividends are key for them.
They really are. It's a core principle for them, almost like a central tenet of their financial strategy. They have a stated objective to distribute a high percentage of their earnings. Specifically, they target a minimum dividend payout of 80% of consolidated net income for fiscal years 2024 and 2025.
80% payout ratio? That's very high.
It is. This commitment makes GTT a compelling high-yield investment, appealing to a broad range of income-focused investors. They also have a consistent track record of increasing their dividend, having done so for 3 consecutive years through 2024, with a proposed 7.50 for 2024. This high payout ratio provides a substantial and reliable cash return to investors and importantly enforces capital discipline on management, ensuring they don't hoard cash unnecessarily.
Keeps them focused. Beyond those generous dividends, where else do they strategically invest their capital?
Their R&D spending, as we discussed, consistently around 10% of revenue, is not just an expense, but a critical strategic investment to maintain GTT's technological moat and develop future solutions for new fuels.
Investing in the future moat.
Exactly. Their core licensing business is inherently asset-light and requires very little organic capital expenditure. The reported $62 million in CapEx in 2024 was likely tied predominantly to their diversification efforts, such as the Alogen venture, rather than their core operations.
So core business needs little capital.
Very little. They also use strategic mergers and acquisitions as a key growth tool, focusing on acquiring specific technologies and market access rather than large-scale industry consolidation. The acquisitions of Ascens, Mororka, and especially Danelec for building out new, promising growth pillars like the digital services.
Buying pieces for diversification.
Right. They also have the GTT Strategic Ventures Fund, which makes smaller minority investments in innovative technology companies like NovoMOF and CorePower Ocean to gain early exposure to potentially disruptive technologies in adjacent fields. Keeping an eye on the next big thing.
And what about share repurchase programs? Do they use buybacks as another way to return capital to shareholders?
While GTT does have an authorized share repurchase program, allowing them to buy back up to 10% of their share capital, its primary stated purpose is quite specific. It's to offset dilution from employee performance share plans.
Ah, so preventing dilution from stock options, not mainly for returns.
Exactly. Ensuring that shareholder equity isn't watered down by new share issuance. It is not intended to systematically return capital to shareholders as a primary means. The generous dividend remains the undisputed primary vehicle for cash returns. This reveals a central tension in their capital allocation. A mature, highly profitable core business, funding a portfolio of riskier long-term growth bets, with that high dividend acting as a very strong governor, ensuring a large majority of predictable cash flow is returned directly to shareholders.
So we have this picture of GTT as an exceptional company, a quasi-monopoly with incredible financials and a fantastic dividend. But every investment comes with a valuation and a set of risks. How does the market price such a niche leader, and what does that tell us about their perceived value?
GTT's truly unique business model and superior financial performance lead to it consistently trading at a premium to its typical peers in the broader energy equipment sector.
Trades higher than others in the space.
Yes, and this premium is generally well justified by its vastly superior margins and returns. As of mid-2025, GTT trades at approximate multiples of 16.7x to 17.0x price to earnings.
Mid to high teens PE.
Right. 14.4x to 16x EV/EBITDA and a high price to sales of 9-10x, which directly reflects its exceptional net margins. Plus, it offers a solid forward dividend yield of 4.5% to 4.8%, which is quite attractive.
That yield helps support the valuation, too. When you look at those multiples against other companies in the energy sector, they do seem quite high, don't they? Does the market fully appreciate what GTT is?
They certainly do look elevated, and it's challenging to find direct comparables because GTT is so unique. If you compare GTT's EV/EBITDA of around 15x to, say, a more traditional energy infrastructure company like Technip Energies, which might trade at about 6x.
Big difference.
Huge difference. GTT's multiples are indeed significantly higher. However, you also have to look at their profitability. GTT boasts a 54% net margin compared to Technip's 8% and an ROE of 75% versus 25%. This vastly superior profitability, combined with their asset-light model and the certainty of their backlog, generally justifies that premium. The market is willing to pay up for the quality and visibility.
So it's a constant tug of war between quality and risk when valuing GTT. How does that play out in trying to determine their intrinsic value?
Exactly. The intrinsic value is a direct function of that tension. On the quality side, you have that near monopoly status, extraordinary profitability, the asset light model driving absurdly high returns on capital, strong revenue visibility from the backlog, and that very generous dividend.
Lots of positives.
Huge positives. On the risk side, you have the high cyclicality inherent in their end markets, extreme customer concentration with very powerful shipyards, the persistent Korean shipyard competitive threat, and the regulatory risk from the KFTC ruling.
Significant risks, too.
Absolutely. A discounted cash flow analysis is certainly appropriate given the backlog visibility, but its sensitivity to assumptions, like the terminal growth rate, leads to varying analyst estimates for fair value, ranging from around 152 euro to 210 per share.
Wide range.
It reflects the uncertainty. Ultimately, the market pricing in the high teens PE suggests it's seen as a high-quality cyclical, acknowledging its superior model, but applying a discount for the inherent cyclicality and those serious long-term competitive threats. Perhaps the market isn't fully valuing their long-term growth options from diversification yet.
Let's delve deeper into those risks, because no matter how good a business is, understanding the potential pitfalls is crucial for you, the listener. What are the most significant structural and long-term threats that GTT faces?
The most prominent and often discussed risk is cyclical exposure to the highly cyclical shipbuilding and LNG markets. GTT's revenues depend almost entirely on new vessel construction, which is driven by large, lumpy investment decisions in major LNG projects.
Boom and bust cycles.
Exactly. A global economic downturn or a significant pause in these investments would sharply decline new orders, despite the current backlog providing a buffer for several years. Secondly, and perhaps more structurally, is customer concentration and the competitive threat. As we discussed, most of their revenue comes from a few powerful South Korean and Chinese shipyards.
Relying on just a few big buyers.
Yes. And these clients are actively developing their own competing technologies to avoid paying GTT royalties, posing an existential threat in the long run if they succeed in matching GTT's performance and reliability.
The fox in the hen house again. And how does the KFTC ruling factor into that competitive threat? It seemed quite significant.
It absolutely is. The KFTC ruling exacerbates this by forcing GTT to unbundle its services. This could fundamentally weaken their moat by allowing sophisticated customers, these very shipyards, to gain deeper hands-on expertise in the construction, installation, and maintenance of the membrane systems. This potentially accelerates their competitive efforts and strengthens their bargaining power.
Makes the competitor stronger over time.
Potentially, yes. Another critical threat is technology obsolescence and patent expiration. GTT's IP moat faces a dual threat. Individual patents have finite lives, requiring continuous innovation to refresh their shield. There's also the persistent, albeit low risk, of a competitor developing a fundamentally cheaper or superior disruptive technology that bypasses GTT's patents entirely.
Leapfrogging them somehow.
Right. Furthermore, the long-term energy transition to zero carbon fuels like hydrogen or ammonia poses an obsolescence risk to LNG itself, requiring GTT to successfully pivot its technology into these new energy vectors. They need to stay relevant.
What about broader regulatory, safety, and geopolitical risks that might affect a company operating on this global scale?
A major safety incident involving a GTT-designed tank, for instance, from an issue like sloshing of the liquid inside the tank, which could cause structural damage regardless of the root cause, could devastate their reputation.
That would be catastrophic for trust.
Absolutely. It could lead to immense litigation and cause a profound loss of customer confidence, potentially favoring alternatives. While the probability is very low given their track record, the impact would be existential. And finally, geopolitical events. GTT's exposure to geopolitical risk, as seen with the war in Ukraine forcing the suspension of Russian contracts, can materially impact operations and customer relationships, particularly given its reliance on shipyards in strategically sensitive regions like East Asia.
Global business means global risks.
Indeed. And then there's the diversification execution risk, highlighted very clearly by the challenges with their Elogen hydrogen venture, which underscores the significant difficulties and potential capital drains of straying too far from core competencies into entirely new business models. Trying new things is hard and risky.
For anyone looking at GTT, whether you're an investor, an industry observer, or just curious, what should you be watching most closely? What are the key metrics that serve as an analyst's dashboard for GTT?
To effectively track GTT's health and future trajectory, you'd want to monitor several categories closely. First, for core business and backlog health, keep a keen eye on their quarterly order intake.
New orders coming in?
Yes. This is the primary leading indicator of future revenue, tracking new orders by segment. LNG carriers, VLECs, FSRUs, and especially LNG as fuel. Also, monitor the total order backlog, both in units and estimated revenue value, to assess their forward revenue visibility.
How big is that safety buffer?
Exactly. And closely related, the backlog duration, how many years of revenue were secured by that backlog. Any shortening here could signal future slowdowns.
And what about their competitive position? How do you track if that formidable moat is holding up against the Korean shipyards?
For market share and competitive dynamics, the single most critical metric is their market share in new LNG carrier orders. Any sustained loss of market share, say, if it consistently drops below their historical 80-90% dominance to competing technologies from Korean shipyards, would be a major red flag for the durability of GTT's moat.
Are they losing ground? That's the key question.
Precisely. You also want to track any specific competitor order wins by alternative systems like KC-1, Solidus, or LNTA Bacchus to see if the competitive threat is actually materializing in a significant way. And in that growing LNG as fuel market, monitor the market share of GTT's membrane solution versus simpler Type C tanks, as this shows their penetration in a newer segment.
Are they winning in that new fuel market too?
Right. Then the financials are key, but also how they're allocating that incredible cash flow.
Absolutely.
For financial performance and capital allocation, watch their EBITDA and net profit margins. Look for any sustained compression from their historical highs, consistently above 60% for EBITDA and 50% plus for net profit, as this would strongly indicate pricing power erosion or rising cost pressures.
Are those amazing margins holding up?
Yes. Also, ensure their dividend payout ratio remains in line with their stated 80% minimum policy. Any deviation there would be a significant strategic signal about their confidence or future plans. And confirm that R&D spending as a percentage of revenue remains robust, close to their historical 10% average, as this investment is fundamental to maintaining that technology moat.
Are they still investing enough in the future?
Critical question. What about those newer growth initiatives, the ones beyond their core LNG carrier business? How do we know if they're actually working? For growth initiative performance, track the digital segment's revenue and gross margin. Watch for consistent growth and profitability from Ascend's Mororka and Danelec to gauge the success of this key diversification.
Is the digital bet paying off?
And for the higher-risk venture, closely monitor the Elegen segment's performance, including revenue, EBITDA, and new orders for the hydrogen subsidiary. This will tell you if this high-risk venture is starting to gain commercial traction or if it continues to be a capital drain.
Is the hydrogen experiment working or costing too much?
Exactly. Finally, there's a crucial forward-looking metric that GTT management itself often highlights, and that can give you an early read on the market. Shipyard slot allocation.
Shipyard slots, meaning?
Meaning you want to monitor their forecasts on how many construction slots global shipyards, particularly in China, are dedicating to LNG carriers in the years ahead. If yards begin to pivot and allocate more of their future capacity to other vessel types, like container ships or tankers.
It means they expect fewer LNG ship orders down the road.
Precisely. It would serve as a powerful early warning signal. It suggests the shipyards themselves foresee a slowdown in LNG ordering, potentially preceding any impact on GTT's own order intake. This third-party validation of future demand is an invaluable metric for long-term outlook. #outro.
So there you have it. We've uncovered GTT as a truly unique company, one that perfectly embodies the profound contrast of its investment profile. On one hand, you have an exceptional, quasi-monopolistic core business with world-class financials, generating incredible profitability and cash flow, practically unheard of in heavy industry.
But this is juxtaposed against significant structural risks. We're talking about high cyclicality in their end markets, extreme customer concentration with powerful shipyards, and intense direct competition from those very same clients who want to cut GTT out of the picture. It's a fascinating balance of formidable strengths and clear vulnerabilities.
You should now have a comprehensive understanding of how GTT operates as a crucial technology gatekeeper in the global energy value chain. Their ability to continuously innovate, to strategically diversify into promising adjacencies, while simultaneously maintaining that formidable trust moat and an extensive patent portfolio, will ultimately determine their future success as they navigate the complex multi-decade landscape of the ongoing energy transition.
As LNG remains a critical transition fuel for decades to come, we're left to wonder. Will GTT successfully pivot from being the indispensable LNG gatekeeper to the broader cryogenics champion of tomorrow's multi-fuel energy landscape, developing solutions for hydrogen and ammonia? Or will its very dominance and unique royalty-based model make it a tempting long-term target for technological and competitive disruption that finally cracks its fortress? What do you think?